Good afternoon. We'll hear argument now in the case of Addison Automatics against Hartford Casualty. Mr. Levy.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Stephen Levy, and I represent the appellant Hartford. In Travelers v. Good, this Court established that an insurance company defendant can remove validly an action seeking to collect a class action judgment if the requisites of CAFA jurisdiction are met. So Addison set out to try to avoid that law by calling its action against Hartford, in this case, a declaratory judgment rather than the type of citation action that was at issue in Good. But Addison made a mistake. In Addison's initial complaint, paragraph C of Addison's prayer for relief stated that it was seeking coverage, a declaration of coverage as to the class action judgment on behalf of itself and on behalf of the class. And then in the signature, they signed the complaint on behalf of themselves and as the class representative. So Hartford removed under CAFA, and when Addison recognized its mistake, it voluntarily dismissed the first complaint and then immediately refiled a second complaint where the references I've just mentioned were deleted. Hartford objected to the voluntary dismissal. That objection was denied by the district court. And then when Hartford removed the second action, Addison sought to remand. The district court granted remand. Hartford then sought leave to appeal under 28 U.S.C. 1453C, and this court granted that leave. Your Honors, Hartford's first contention is that this history alone shows that remand of this case should not have been granted. It's a fundamental principle of CAFA jurisdiction that post-removal changes to complaint allegations do not impact CAFA jurisdiction.
Presumably, though, Mr. Levy, you're looking for a ruling that would also apply in situations in which that first false start was not made on this strategy?
If
the second complaint had been the first one?
If Your Honors go beyond the issue of whether or not this violates that rule, then yes, we would also certainly contend that the second complaint is still every bit as much of a class action as the first complaint. But we believe that the history alone here violates the rule that post-removal changes to a complaint do not affect CAFA jurisdiction, because in Burlington, this court made it clear that post-removal amendments to a complaint to delete class allegations would not be sufficient to avoid CAFA jurisdiction. Well, here, instead of doing it that way, the plaintiff voluntarily dismissed and then refiled, which is every bit in substance as much of a post-removal change in the complaint allegations as an amendment of the initial complaint to delete the class action allegations would have been.
And let me just suggest, though, that I'm not sure we would have granted review simply to deal with the faint left, move right error and to produce a decision that says just claim that you're suing only individually the first time. I don't think we would be here this afternoon if that were the issue.
Mm-hmm. I'll finish up that point very briefly. Then I would just add that if, in fact, that fake left, fade right move is allowed, then basically the entire rule against post-removal changes to complaint allegations would be eviscerated, because plaintiffs would simply always voluntarily dismiss and refile rather than seek some other type of change. So we believe on that basis alone the remand could be reversed. But getting on to the main point of this appeal, the second issue of whether this complaint in substance is still a class action. The second complaint did, in fact, delete the allegations that I mentioned. However, the second complaint continued to have all of the allegations regarding the harm to the class, continued to have all of the allegations about the constitution of the class and about Addison as class representative, and the exhibits to the complaint also contain that information. And those are all cataloged at pages 4 and 5 and note 6 of Hartford's opening brief and page 4 of Hartford's reply brief. And most notably, that complaint kept the second paragraph of the prayer for relief, which requested a declaration that Hartford owed coverage to its insured Domino for the entire class action judgment rendered against Domino, not just for Addison's portion of the judgment.
I want to ask you a quick question. Just if If your insured lost a class action and your insured then sued you for indemnification, is that a class action?
The insured sued for indemnification and was not suing on behalf of the class. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that would be a class action, Your Honor. However, in this case, Addison, as the assignee of the insured, is suing to recover the class judgment. And in Travelers versus Good, the court did indicate that that would, in fact, be removable as long as the CAFA requisites were otherwise met. And here, the CAFA requisites were met because Addison specifically requested a declaration as to the entire class judgment. Now, that's significant because Addison places heavy reliance on the Boeing case from the Supreme Court and this court's recent Terza decision, which Addison just cited as supplemental authority. Now, Addison construes those cases as standing for the proposition that each class member has an individual right to bring its own action for its own share of the class action judgment. Hartford does not concede that. The argument on that point is set forth fully in our briefs. We contend that Addison had to bring this case as a class action, but let's assume arguendo for purposes of today that Addison is right in its interpretation of these cases. If it is, all Addison had to do was in its complaint delete all the, not make any references to the harm to the class, and state that it was seeking a declaration that Hartford owed coverage solely for Addison's share of the class action judgment and nothing more. But Addison didn't do that. And Addison didn't do that, we submit, because of an advertent decision. They wanted to have it both ways. They wanted to, on the one hand, be able to claim for jurisdiction purposes this is an individual action, but on the other hand, if they did succeed and get a judgment, they wanted to be able to argue that that was going to be applicable to the entire class.
Isn't there another reason? Perhaps we'll ask this of Mr. Oppenheim. But if a class representative abandons the class and then says, just give relief for me, forget about everybody else in the class, then we have a serious problem with breach of fiduciary obligations to the class?
Well, that goes back to the first argument, Your Honor, that they could not have brought this case as an individual action, but assuming...
Well, they could have. It just would have had certain consequences.
It would have had consequences that they did breach their fiduciary duty to the class, but we submit that what they're trying to do here is have it both ways, that they really are bringing this as a class action and trying to disguise it as an individual action in order to both get around this court's statements in Good and to get around CAFA jurisdiction. So basically, we submit that the complaint allegations as they are still a class action.
Did you file a notice of removal asserting the diversity jurisdiction independent of the 2005 statute?
Our notice of removal was based on CAFA, Your Honor.
Any particular reason why you didn't invoke 1332 and then 1441?
Well, they claimed in their most recent complaint that their individual damages were less than $75,000.
I understand that, but the complaint on its face seeks a declaratory judgment of the whole value of the policy. Right? It seems to me there are two ways one can understand this. Either this action seeks relief for the entire value of the policy, in which event it is within federal court under the diversity jurisdiction without regard to the 2005 statute, or it's seeking relief essentially on a class-wide basis for the class as a whole. And the individual shares are too small, but then the Class Action Fairness Act applies. I'm a little surprised you didn't try to cover both of those two possibilities.
Our thought, Your Honor, was that this was so clearly under CAFA that we thought we would proceed under CAFA.
And you didn't rethink that even after you lost in the district court? You know, I find it very strange. There are two ways that this case could be removed, and it's odd for a lawyer to say, well, I'm sure that way number one is correct, so I'll just ignore way number two.
Your Honor, I was not the trial counsel or the counsel that drafted the initial removal papers, so I really can't speak further to it other than that we felt that the CAFA jurisdiction was, in fact, a very clear answer.
Well, one is potentially appealable and the other is not.
Well, there is that
if it's denied.
Sure. Yep. I would just like to briefly talk about a couple of additional authorities that we believe support our position here. The CAFA Senate report makes it clear that it's not the label that's attached to the complaint that controls. It's whether the complaint resembles a class action, and here the complaint clearly resembles a class action. We also have this court's LG Display case, where this court held that the test is to look to the essential nature of the complaint as a whole, and while in that case the essential nature was a non-removable parens patriae action, here the essential nature was in fact the class action. And I want to make one other point about the Good case, Your Honors. They're also not only trying to call a class action an individual action here, but they're trying to distinguish this declaratory judgment action from the citation action that was at issue in Good. And substantively, there is no distinction between those two types of cases, Your Honors, because both are essential first steps to collect the class action judgment. And in fact, in Good, this court articulated the test as whether the insurance coverage dispute had sufficiently crystallized as to the class action judgment. And you said that if that happened, Travelers could have removed in that case.
The one is slightly easier to recognize as a separate proceeding that can be removed. So.
It is, but in substance, we submit they are the same thing.
This is the version that's easier to recognize.
I think that here the coverage dispute has clearly crystallized because it's a declaratory judgment action as to coverage. And just lastly, the plaintiffs cite the Anderson case from this court, and Anderson really has no applicability because it involved mass actions and attempts to aggregate claims by the defendant, which is not being at issue here. For all those reasons, Your Honors, Hartford respectfully requests that the district court's remand order be reversed. Thank you, Your Honors. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Levy. Mr. Oppenheim.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the
court. Please don't touch the microphone. Please don't touch the microphone.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Removal statutes are strictly construed. This one applies to a statutorily defined subset of cases, and those are class actions defined as any civil action filed under Rule 23 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure or a similar state statute or rule.
Mr. Oppenheim, your complaint is littered with references to the class and the rights of the class members in the underlying action. Your prayer for relief asks for a declaration that the policy requires Hartford to indemnify Domino for the judgment entered against it in the underlying action. Without limiting the declaration to the amount of the judgment due and owing to Addison alone, why is that not a class action?
Because the references Your Honor is referring to refer to the class action that was Addison versus Domino, the underlying case. That's a separate case. This is merely an action brought by Addison, who was one of the beneficiaries of the judgment in that case, for a declaration that there's insurance coverage. Addison is not seeking to reconstitute the class within this action. And as this court held in Terza, and I quote, a class certified is not a juridical entity. So, in other words, simply by Addison trying to vindicate its rights in the underlying class action, which is described in the complaint, it does not mean it's transporting the class.
Counsel, I don't recognize that opinion from your description. Holtzman against Terza was a B3 class action. The current proceeding, if it is properly understood as a class, is a B2 class action. Either everybody wins or everybody loses all at once. There aren't any individual segregatable claims. Either the insurance proceeds are available for everybody or they're available for nobody. That's a B2 class, and a B2 class is a juridical entity. Well, I thought Holtzman was perfectly clear that it's talking about B3 classes. Maybe it's not clear enough.
I hadn't drawn that distinction, Your Honor, but at the end of the day, even with B2, there needs to be some sort of indicia in the complaint as well as a motion that seeks to certify the question at hand is applicable to a broad class.
Mr. Oppenheim, In pursuing this declaratory judgment, does Addison have any fiduciary duty to the domino class? And I suggest you think very carefully about the answer. Because if the answer is no, it would call into serious question its adequacy as class representative, assignee, and counsel's adequacy as class counsel.
And I think, Your Honor, we answered that question in our appellee brief. I think the answer is yes, but simply having a fiduciary duty that extends to the class that it was certified to represent within the confines of the Addison versus Domino case is not the same thing as requiring that every step it takes be done is so, a new class action.
So Addison is suing in its capacity as assignee and class on behalf of the class, correct?
It's suing as it's in its capacity as assignee, yes.
And nobody else in the class was assigned any interest in the was assigned the interest in the insurance policy, were they?
I would dispute that. I think the assignment here, as the assignment in Good, is clear that the assignment was to the class as a whole, and because
as represented by plaintiff and its attorneys.
Yes.
So we are not facing the prospect of hundreds of separate actions against Hartford here, are we?
We could be.
Why on earth would we want that?
We might not want it, but I think at the end of the day that a plaintiff is the master of his complaint, and he can choose to bring a declaratory judgment action on his own behalf, even if it affects other people, even if it affects other people he might have some duty to.
Addison is so coy about the relief that's being sought. You want a declaratory judgment that Hartford is obligated to cover the settlement in the underlying class action, but you claim to be seeking relief only for yourself and not on behalf of the class. And it seems to me that what would happen here is he would take that relief and turn right around and claim that it's res judicata for every other party in the underlying class. And that's because when the complaint is read, there are so many mentions of the class and the rights of the class that I think it becomes immediately clear that this is a continuation of sorts of the class action.
Well, Your Honor, I think that if that were true, we would have had to have brought a 1402 action, or we would have had to some way indicate that we sought to certify and reconstitute the class within this action. Now, it's entirely true, and I would agree, that should Addison succeed on the merits in its case, that the ruling that results would be applicable through collateral estoppel purposes, although not res judicata purposes, to bind Hartford as to other people. But that, again, is not how Congress define class action for the purpose of CAFA. They could have said any action which may result in a ruling that has collateral estoppel benefits for more than 40 persons.
God help us. Mr. Oppenheim, let me just ask you, I can't imagine what the litigation would be like if that had been the writing, but how much is Addison's individual claim for?
Addison's individual claim is for approximately $16,000. That includes the $15,000 incentive award.
Okay. And if Hartford offered Addison $30,000 to settle its claim, could you do that?
To settle
could
its claim for declaratory relief?
For twice. Settle your individual claim in this case for twice the amount that you have at stake. Could you do that?
In release only our share of the underlying judgment? Might implicate, depending on the scope of the relief, that might implicate the fiduciary duties we've been talking about that carry over from the prior case.
I agree.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that, could you?
I think possibly, provided that, for example, we were as part of the deal to pass off the torch to some other member of the class to continue to pursue the class's interests, and the release only encompassed Addison's individual claims, I think we could probably do it, theoretically.
Don't try. Okay.
Yeah.
But I think that we're getting further afield than we need to get. I think that at the end of the day, everybody is citing Travelers versus Good. Everybody's citing LG Display. And what LG Display says is that it needs to be pled as a class action. It needs to have the allegations under Rule 23 or the equivalent. In this case, doesn't, regardless of what implications it might have to the other
class. I must say
that's
where you lose me. Class has already been certified in this case. Addison Automatics is already the class representative. What's going on here is you claim this is a separate piece of litigation, but your client is the class representative of a certified class. It's awfully hard to say there's no class in the picture here.
I'm not saying that there's no class in the picture, Your Honor. I'm saying
and
that there's a class in another picture in another frame.
And your client is asking for the relief that the class supposedly got.
Well, we're asking for a declaration that there's coverage. We're not asking for a monetary judgment, for example, that would satisfy the entire underlying judgment. That would be a collection action. The point I was going to make about Travelers versus Good is, Your Honors will recall that opinion dealt with two separate proceedings. There was, in that case, the declaratory judgment action, like this case, that Travelers filed, and then there was the underlying class action that involved a supplementary collection proceeding. And the opinion addressed both of those actions, and really the discussion about CAFA that's contained within that opinion is contained within the context of the collection proceeding within the class case. It was not a discussion that a declaratory judgment action of Travelers versus Good, in which was the case appealed to this court, was itself a class action. Now, obviously, this case and that case will have an impact on a class that's present in a class action. But I submit that CAFA is not broad enough in terms of a statutory vehicle to encompass that scenario. It requires the class to be pled and present within the action sought for which jurisdiction sought. And as Judge Easterbrook mentioned in questioning of Mr. Levy, they could have said, okay, well, this is a declaratory judgment action for insurance coverage for a $17 million judgment, therefore traditional diversity applies. They didn't say that. And the removal is devoid of any reference to that argument. So really
You see, what troubles me is there are two possibilities here. One possibility is that this is, as you contend, a completely individual standalone claim by Addison Automatics. In that event, Addison Automatics is seeking a declaratory judgment with a value of $17 million. There appears to be complete diversity of citizenship. As far as I can tell, there is complete diversity, and the case is removable. The other possibility is that Addison is here in its role as the class representative and agent for the class. In that event, its claim is well under $75,000, but the total stakes exceed $5 million, and the case is removable under the Class Action Fairness Act. I don't see how it is possible to say it doesn't come to federal court. It's just a question of which of these two branches of the argument brings it to federal court.
Well, I think that the third possibility is, again, that Addison is here as a beneficiary of the class judgment. The fact that it's the representative as well is neither here nor there, and the value of its claim is
$16,000. Addison is not asking for its claim to be paid to it. Addison is asking for a declaratory judgment that the policy applies and there are no defenses. That is, it's asking for an all-or-none judgment. It's not asking for its $16,000. That's the problem with that theory. That's not what the complaint says.
Well, what the complaint says is it wants a declaration that the policy provides coverage. And it's not seeking any monetary relief on behalf of anybody. It's seeking a declaration by the court with regard to policy interpretation.
Yes, but we've been through this. It is basically seeking the kind of relief that's appropriate in a B2 class action, where everybody wins or everybody loses. It's not seeking the kind of relief that's available in a B3 action, where one person can win and the other can lose. That's just the nature of your claim. You're asking for a class-wide declaratory judgment and not $16,000 in pocket. Right? You could have asked, give me $16,000. And then you would have had a much stronger argument than what you have now. It's not what you did, though.
But you would have abandoned your class.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it might have been breach of fiduciary duty and subjected you to sanctions and all sorts of other things, but as a jurisdictional matter, you could have done that.
I suppose that my response to Your Honor is that we could also have directly sought to bring our class into an arena against Hartford as a whole, such that everyone's claim is litigated. We could also have sought, through the use of 735 ILCS 52801, to make it the state equivalent of a B2 class, such that the declaration would, by force of the statute, apply to the entire class certified in the Domino case, and we didn't do that. We made a conscious decision not to do that. So the fact that there may be collateral estoppel implications, I think, is not sufficient
to now creating still another option which hasn't had to be briefed. But if you say what we're seeking is relief on behalf of all the class members, and we're doing that through an individual action with collateral estoppel effects of everybody else, I think you've now made it a mass action removable under the Act, because there are more than 100 class members. And we held in Bullard against Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad that an individual action seeking collateral estoppel effect for more than 100 people is a mass action under the Act.
But, Your Honor, in LG Display, that was essentially the argument as well, that the Attorney General's and Parens Patriae action undisputedly would have benefited more than 100
people. Patriae actions don't involve a class. They are distinct governmental interests. And the Supreme Court covered that at length in EEOC against Waffle House in explaining, for example, why private arbitration agreements don't bind the EEOC, that they are separate interests. But I hope you're not suggesting that our Burlington Northern case has been implicitly overruled by the panel's recent decision. I don't see any conflict there.
Your Honor, I see my time's expired.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Oppenheim. Mr. Levy, anything further?
Your Honors, this is a very coy pleading. It's a pleading that did try to have it both ways. And in the Back Doctors case, this court reversed a remand for exactly that type of coy pleading that was trying to, on the one hand, leave open the possibility of punitive damages, but on the other hand, not expressly plead them but not disclaim them. We have the same type of thing going on here. They really are attempting, on the one hand, to try to call it an individual action when it really isn't. There was nothing to prevent them, other than their fiduciary duty, from saying specifically that this was an individual action where they were seeking only a declaration as to their own portion of the judgment. They didn't do that. On that alone, this is a class action. And we submit that this is a very clear class action because of that language and because of the fact that they're expressly seeking coverage for the entire class judgment. And we also submit that this case is also very much like the Good case in terms of the relief sought. Again, we don't think that it's a valid distinction to say that Good was a citation action and this is a declaratory judgment action, because in both, the insurance coverage dispute is sufficiently crystallized to have justified removal. So for all those reasons, Your Honors, Hartford respectfully requests that the remand order be reversed. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.